Hey guys, you've heard of the Young Turks podcast because you're listening to it right now. But make sure that you subscribe and give it a 5-star rating if you like it. Thank you for listening. That's supposed to be slow motion. Okay. But okay.
Our special effects budget is not high.
No. I got to do it all on my own here. All right. Janky, you're John Idol. Look, Aaron Rise back, everybody. See again, that's me doing the sound effects. So you guys know Aaron is the host of Hysteria podcast on Crooked Media. You all know that. Don't pretend you don't. But did you know, as I found out earlier today, that she's also a writer on Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
That's pretty cool.
It's true.
Hello, that's freaking awesome.
It's true. It's a nice escape, I think, from the current madness to like inflict madness on on imaginary jerks rather than watching real jerks inflict madness on each other.
So. Yes, I love that. That's true. Do you love that show?
Oh yeah, no, I've seen every episode. Love
yeah, it. He's actually secretly obsessed. He's trying to play it cool.
Oh, I'm obsessed. I really like it. I've liked it for years.
Obsessed. Let's keep it real.
It's awesome, and I think it's an indictment of society that it's not more popular. It's ridiculous that that's not one of the biggest shows on TV.
14 seasons.
That's amazing.
Longest running live action comedy, half hour comedy in American history.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Is that true in American history?
Mm-hmm. In American TV history.
Take that, Lucille Ball.
Live action, though. So, like The Simpsons, okay. Simpsons can wipe the floor with everybody.
Yeah, I got you. Still. Okay, and it's a look. We love Brian Unger. He comes on the show. He's there. Danny DeVito secretly sometimes gives to some causes that we're part of. So lots of love for Always Sunny in Philly. All right. Now that we're done having fun, on to disastrous news.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So Trump has taken some action on coronavirus. So buckle up, brace for impact. No, some of it is actually good. And then we have very important updates. We've also taken action in further bombing Iranian interests. So disease, pestilence, and war in the program. So yep. It's Friday. Okay, yep. John, you want to take
why
it away?
Why don't we jump right into it?
Yep.
Today, Donald Trump once again addressed the nation on coronavirus. And we found out right before he went live that he would be doing it off teleprompter. So I was excited for it. But he starts off serious, declaring a national emergency.
To unleash the full power of the federal government in this effort today, I am officially declaring a national emergency. Two very big words. The action I am taking will open up access to up to $50 billion of very important and a large amount of money for states and territories and localities in our shared fight against this disease. In furtherance of the order, I'm urging every state to set up emergency operation centers effective immediately. You're going to be hearing from some of the largest companies and greatest retailers and medical companies in the world. They're standing right behind me and inside of me.
National emergency, two big words, one tiny brain. That was like, no, if you say that, you don't get to be president anymore. That should be in the Constitution.
I'm pretty sure it's not. So the fact that he's declaring a national emergency is actually very good. Mm-hmm. One of the things they were preventing is from states spending more money on Medicaid to help people in case they might die. They were preventing that until today. And so national emergency frees up some of that to now go towards assistance. I want to come back to that because that's such an important issue. But in the midst of even doing something generally positive, he can't help but botch it and make a mockery of the whole thing. Very big words, two big words. Why are we commenting on the size of the words when it's a national emergency?
Because that's the first time he's read that sentence, because he had absolutely nothing to do with crafting that message, I assume.
That's right. And when that's even Ari Fleischer, who defends him all the time on Fox News, former spokesperson for Bush, said after the teleprompter speech from the Oval Office, he's like, he probably should have read it before he went on air. And here he's off the prompter, but he's like, and importantly, or things that are important, I am told, dude, it's the most important thing, not only in the country, not only for people's health, but to get your attention, the thing you're obsessed about, because you think it might affect your reelection. So can we focus for a second? And generally speaking, the answer is no. And then I'll also get back to the companies he surrounded himself with in a second.
Yeah, I think it was more of a meme emergency than an emergency, because Donald Trump can only care about things in as much as they affect him and what he cares about. So he appears to be willing to like push a grandma down some stairs in order to check on the stock market in its bed. You know, he doesn't really care about anything except his own reelection, his own chances at continuing to think of himself as this big, strong, rich businessman, or a guy who plays one on TV at least.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly it.
Yeah, and look, I know you're gonna talk about some of the corporations. I was hearing brand names dropped left and right, and a lot of people believe that, sure, this was to some extent to reassure regular people, but it was definitely meant to reassure the stock market after some horrendous weeks. And it appeared that they delayed the speech so that it would be happening right leading up to the close of the stock market, so that it would look great at the end of the day. And look, it did rise significantly, at least in the short term, with such promises as we're gonna spend a ton of our money to purchase extra oil to put in the national stockpile, rather than just investing it into renewables or something like that. And there were a few other changes, which I'm sure we're gonna get to. But there, it was a very weird sort of cyberpunky thing that it was just constant references to corporations. You'd have a government official and then a CEO, then another government official, then a CEO. And it's like government, private sector, back and forth constantly, who's actually in charge.
Mm-hmm. I thought one thing that was really interesting about the timing of the announcement, which you talked about a little bit, is Friday after market close. So that ostensibly gives investors 3 days to digest what he says and calm down a little bit. I was thinking about the last time there was a huge post-market close announcement when the markets were going crazy. I worked in finance in 2008, and there was a
Friday. Did anything happen at that time?
Don't remember. Was pretty drunk. No, it was. There was a Friday, a weekend in September in 2008. When on Friday after market closed, they announced that Lehman collapsed. Merrill was getting purchased by Bank of America, and then on Monday, stocks still went crazy. So I think the timing of this announcement was sort of an admission on the part of the Trump administration to try that Trump's speeches are not helping. They're not calming anybody down. And so let's distance it as far as we possibly can from the next time the market opens. Mm-hmm. And I also think it was an admission that, like, you know, I don't know, they don't know if they can stop the economic fallout from this, which is seems to be his primary concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, definitely. And so look, they're way more concerned about the health of the markets than the health of the citizens. No question about that. So if you were doing, if I was doing a coronavirus event, a press conference, where I wanted to assure the country that everything was gonna be all right, I would have surrounded myself with doctors and scientists. Instead, Donald Trump, being Trump and a Republican, surrounded himself with corporations. He's like, now corporate America, don't worry, we're here for you. We're gonna buy more oil than we need. We got the Fed pumping in $1.5 trillion to the banks. And don't worry, Johnson & Johnson, ExxonMobil, we care about your health, okay? We're here for you. They're like, sir, you're supposed to at least mention the citizens. Right, yeah. Right, the citizens are, I'm told, very, very important. I neglected to mention that earlier. What does he do, by the way, with all the corporate executives surrounding him? Shakes all their hands.
Yeah, I think we can actually put up some B-roll. It's like, yes, he loves them to the extent that he will, maybe we can put that up. Take the entire power of the federal government and put it to their service. But having recently been exposed to coronavirus himself, he just goes around touching mics, touching them, touching hands. Stop adjusting it.
You know, I feel like this,
shaking hands with business leaders.
I feel like this moment in American history is a sort of lesson on the dangers of carcinogenic self-regard meeting unbridled optimism. Because Donald Trump thinks he can just bluster his way out of this. That if we don't get tested, if we don't have people get tested, then it's like we won't even know who had it, and it's like they didn't exist. It's like, yeah. I tweeted this the other day, but it was like after a weekend of partying in my 20s, I wouldn't check my bank account on Monday, because if I don't know how little money is in it, then it's like it doesn't exist. But that's not the truth. And I don't think Donald Trump has an ability to see further beyond the end of his nose. If he could, he would understand that it's better for markets to take care of the people in the country that he is leading. And that it is better for his reelection chances if he is honest and forthright and proves himself to be a reliable messenger in the early stages of this. He's already messed it up so badly that nothing that he can do can possibly get that trust back.
So, Aaron, you're taking the words out of my mouth. Yesterday, I talked about the only thing that Trump knows is marketing. And to be fair to him, he's pretty good at marketing. He lies, he's braggadocious, all those things. But in marketing, that works. And so, but you can't market your way out of this mess because it's the disease doesn't care about your spin. If you will, it's in a no spin zone. And so, so he's trying to just spin his way out. And part of that is hiding the numbers on the amount of coronavirus that actually is here in America and the number of people affected. But for God's sake, let's talk about actual healthcare. So in that regard, the national emergency helps because it frees up some funding that actually could go towards people's healthcare. And as Anna said on the show yesterday, it's funny when you've got a national emergency like this and everybody's worried about their lives, what do they ask for? They ask for socialism. They say, hey, government, big government, I need you. I need your help. Oh my God, you gotta give, the government's gotta give money to protect people's lives. Well, that's true. That's why we're for Medicare for all, because if it's your life on the line, it doesn't matter if it's coronavirus or cancer or stroke, etc. Your life's on the line either way. And that's why Medicare for all would be the government helping you to do that. And by the way, it's less expensive. But it's not just Trump. The same Democratic leaders who were furious yesterday saying, my God, why will you not release more funding for Medicaid for the states people's lives are on the line, then turn around and go, oh, but if they have something else, I don't care at all. No, I'm not going to give them Medicaid, Medicare. I'm not going to give them anything unless they've got the money for it, because then there isn't a lot of press around it and I can get away with it.
I mean, if you're actually really sick in a world where you only get government help when you have this specific disease, imagine being in a position where you're sick and you have to go to the hospital and you hope you have coronavirus so that it doesn't bankrupt you. Because that's what the situation is that we're in right now.
That's a great point. I'm sorry, John. I hadn't thought of it that way. If you get sick at this specific moment, if it's coronavirus, it'll likely get funded. Certainly the tests will be funded and you hope that maybe the treatment will get funded.
Got it.
But if you have another life-threatening illness, it will not get funded and you will probably die if you don't have insurance or can't afford the deductible, etc.
Right.
So some people might literally be doing what Aaron suggested, like, oh, I hope it's corona.
Yeah, a lot of people are really reckless with their health. They get like chronic illnesses and stuff like that. Get something trendy, Jesus. But anyway, yes, and so you talked about the national emergency that might free up some money. We also have supposedly, I want to see the details on this, but they did announce they're going to be suspending interest on student loans. We'll see about that. I would say that if you understand the corrosive effect on the economy of people having to pay off that interest, you should probably understand that having the debt in the first place is a million times worse, so maybe we should just cancel it. But that is what at least they announced they would do. Now, I can't help but remember that in the Oval Office address just a few days ago, multiple things that Trump announced, the White House walked back the next day. So don't accept that any of this is necessarily true. You're gonna wanna check to see tomorrow. But we also had the rollout of a flowchart of how supposedly testing is going to work in the future. And so now many people finished watching this press release frustrated that no one can answer the question, when will tests be available? I can say that my wife went to the doctor today for other health reasons, asked about testing, and the doctor said, we can't test here and we have no idea when we'll be able to. And I just watched that press conference. There was only vague assurances that at some point something will happen, at some point more tests will be available. Not any way for you to know when you can actually get one. And one concern is the, if you saw that flowchart, the top picture was that there's going to be a website to help sort of do triage to find out if you need to get tested and what should happen after that. And they announced that Google's gonna be doing it. He talked about how Google's gonna do a great website unlike other websites because he can't get through an announcement like this without attacking the ACA. But after the press conference, Google, their communications Twitter account put out a statement from Verily, the development group responsible for this tool, saying, we're developing a tool to help triage individuals for COVID-19 testing. Verily is in the early stages of development and planning to roll testing out in the Bay Area with the hope of expanding more broadly over time. which does not sound like this is gonna be available next week. And we're in a crisis right now. This sounds like, sure, maybe this is good, and maybe it will at some point be available, but you can't count on this be around. If we're at 10,000 cases in a week and a half, this won't necessarily be here to help us get through that.
Wait, are they beta testing the website? Like in the middle of this, not only the virus, but they're supposed to announce on that website what to do about the virus, and the site's not even ready?
No. I mean, it takes time to set this stuff up, and unfortunately, Trump has waited until 5 weeks into the US form, like the US focused part of this pandemic, to do anything about it.
Yeah, I think that we're also learning day by day that being good at public health and being good at marketing are two totally different things. And everything, all of Trump's marketing muscles, like you're talking about, are actually acting in a way that is bad for the public at large when it comes to public health. During times of crisis, people need facts, they need reliable timelines, they need honesty. They don't need bluster, overestimation, and the word very 70,000 times talking about websites. Honestly, Donald Trump sounds like a guy who has only skimmed the summary and is trying to give an oral argument about the reading that he didn't do. And sometimes it's sort of funny when he's talking about, you know, he just had a meeting with a different country's president, and he's like talking about, you know, the chief exports of whatever. That's sort of funny. This is so not funny. Yeah. This is so terrifying to watch.
You want an example of exactly what you're just saying there? We have a video. So let's get the telehealth video. So he was talking about telehealth, this concept, which he's apparently very interested in. And here he is going off script to talk about why he finds it so compelling.
And care for patients. This includes the following critical authorities: the ability to waive laws to enable telehealth, a fairly new and incredible thing that's happened in the not so distant past. I tell you, what they've done with telehealth is incredible.
That could have been the first time he's ever seen that word before, and I would have no idea.
And I don't know what it is to this moment, because he said it's incredible thing that happened. It's a thing that's recent. Amazing.
I mean, and it is a testament to his complete being out of his depth here, because telehealth is something that for people in rural areas, I'm from a very rural area, it's really helpful. If you can't go to see a doctor in person, or if you have something contagious or whatever, but if you're far away from a hospital and you want to get a checkup and you can talk to a doctor, a lot of Trump's base are in areas that really could benefit from knowing about telehealth and actually being able to utilize it. So he's so dumb. It's like he's own goaling left and right. It's not even that he's missing goals for the other, like on the right side. He's kicking them back into his own goal. It doesn't make any sense to me. And people are getting sick.
Yeah. But they're incredible self goals. They're the biggest self goals anyone's ever done. Now, if I had seen that and it was Joe Biden who had done it, I'd be concerned. And certainly the right wing would say, in the not too distant past, it's incredible. What was that? What did you just say, right? Mm-hmm. Trump does it, we're used to it. We're like, oh yeah, Trump, the imbecile that can't put together a sentence, is our president in the middle of a worldwide pandemic where people's lives are on the line.
Yeah, and it would be one thing if he was just bungling, but at least could own up to it and learn from it. But we're gonna turn now to a video if we could get A4 ready. One of, I think, the most important moments from this Trump address was a very important question that I think a lot of people have been wondering about, considering the slow response to COVID-19 from Trump. Does he take some responsibility for standing in the way of actually addressing the crisis?
Mr. President, Dr. Fauci said earlier this week that the lag in testing was in fact a failing. Do you take responsibility for that? And when can you guarantee that every single American who needs a test will be able to have a test? What's the date of that?
Yeah, no, I don't take responsibility at all, because we were given a set of circumstances, and we were given rules, regulations, and specifications from a different time. Wasn't meant for this kind of an event with the kind of numbers that we're talking about.
So, of course, he doesn't take responsibility. He's never taken responsibility for anything in his life. He'll say that, you know, we were handed regulations. They weren't meant for this. I mean, forget the fact that he's been president for 3 years at this point. And, you know, he fired the pandemic response team, was asked about that, and said, I don't remember that. That wasn't me. Somebody else did that. The buck stops literally anywhere. Go look for the buck somewhere. I can't see it. And he compared the response to this, to the response under Obama to H1N1, and lied about the response, because within the first month of cases in the US, they tested 1 million people back during that outbreak. In 5 weeks, we've tested 10,000, and he wants you to believe that he's doing a bang up job and they were losers back then.
Yeah, I don't take any responsibility at all. I think that's what Truman said, right? Word for word. and I think that that's what a lot of American presidents are really famous for. Hey, listen, man, it wasn't me. That was Shaggy. That was Shaggy.
I think the quote is ask not what your country can do for you, it ain't my fault. We're not doing nothing.
Ask what your country can do for me. For me, okay? It's not my responsibility at all. The United States president said in the middle of a pandemic when everyone's looking to him for reassurance. Because that also means later when things go wrong again for the 100th time in a row, I'm gonna tell you, it wasn't me, man. It's not my responsibility. I'm just gonna blame random other people. And I'm gonna blame people from 3 years ago, even though I'm the one who shut down the pandemic office. Mm-hmm. So we all know he's a miserable liar. And even the MAGA guys know he's a miserable liar, but they're like, yeah, but he owns the libs. Except when you get coronavirus, and then I guess he owned you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, first of all, he's never met the buck, never heard of the buck. He takes pictures with millions of bucks a day. You know, he could be in, the buck could be just, you know, just some random person. I think that it is a real chump move to be in charge of anything and not take responsibility for when things go wrong. You can't expect credit and not accept blame. And that's where we are right now, is somebody who wants all the credit and none of the blame.
That's Trump 101.
Yeah, and that's what the speech was. It was half deflecting to other people and making up facts to make it seem as if it's their fault, and then half congratulating himself. And then having a parade of people come up to congratulate him as if we live in some tin pot dictatorship. But that's what he was doing. And in terms of like the need for like praise, a couple weeks ago when we had at that point 21 cases or so, no one had died yet. And he was bragging, why am I not getting credit? No one has died. And today he was bragging that only 40 people have died. In a month, you don't think he'd brag if it's only 500, if it's only 2,500? What will he be bragging about in the future and demanding that you give him respect for? But look, he was asked a follow-up question because that was not a satisfactory response. So here is Yumiche Alcindor with a response about that.
First question is, you said that you don't take responsibility, but you did disband the White House pandemic office, and the officials that were working in that office left this administration abruptly. So what responsibility do you take to that? And the officials that worked in that office said that the White House lost valuable time because that office wasn't disbanded. What do you make of that?
Well, I just think it's a nasty question, because what we've done is, and Tony has said numerous times that we've saved thousands of lives because of the quick closing. And when you say me, I didn't do it. We have a group of people. I could ask perhaps my administration, but I could perhaps ask Tony about that, because I don't know anything about it. I mean, you say we did that. I don't know anything about it.
You don't know about the reorganization that happened at the National Security Council.
It's the administration. Perhaps they do that. You know, people let people go. You used to be with a different newspaper than you are now. You know, things like that happen.
But this was
please go ahead. We're doing a great job.
So you can't see from that camera angle, but at that point they cut off her mic. They don't do that in press conferences in the White House, but they started doing it today. They cut off her mic for Trump to then talk over her, saying, we're doing a great job, after blaming the doctor for firing the global pandemic response team, I think.
And if you're the president and you don't know that you disbanded your office to handle pandemics, and by the way, you're at a press conference in the middle of a pandemic, and that's news to you at this late date, then you are the worst leader that anyone has ever seen. You didn't bother asking anyone, hey guys, do we have anything to handle pandemics? Because we're in the middle of one. Mm-hmm. We shut it down? Who shut that down? Was it Tony? you never even asked that before, but of course you know he shut it down. Knows. Mm-hmm. He knows he shut it down, but he can't help but be a miserable liar.
Yeah, I mean, it also should be noted that the woman who asked him that question is a part of the demographic that Donald Trump loves to demonize every time he's in trouble. She's a well-spoken, professional, intelligent black woman. And he has done that left and right during times of crisis. And I just don't think it's gonna work this time. I still think he doesn't understand how serious this is.
Yeah. We've had to learn his language over the past few years. Nasty means woman of color. Yes. Low IQ means black. Let's see, crazy means better populist than me. I mean, he has these labels every single time. You know exactly what he means. But the thing is, there he is denied responsibility twice. And it turns out that under the law of there is always a tweet for that, Trump has talked quite a bit about responsibility in the past. And I figured, why don't I read a few of his select quotes about responsibility and leadership. Back in 2013, he said, "Leadership, whatever happens, you're responsible. If it doesn't happen, you're responsible. Unless you're president, I guess."
That's a nasty tweet.
A nasty tweet. In 2013, he said, "To be in charge, you have to take responsibility. You have to instill confidence. It's like being a conductor, set the tempo." He quoted Winston Churchill in 2014, "The price of greatness is responsibility." Well, then I guess we know you're not responsible and clearly don't have greatness. And then I came across this. I can't believe that people haven't been sharing this one. In October 2014, during the Ebola panic, he said, "President Obama has a personal responsibility to visit and embrace all people in the US who contract Ebola." Although, to be fair, he has been meeting a lot of people with coronavirus recently and shaking a lot of hands.
Oh yeah, a lot of handshakery. And he doesn't quite understand that, like in the presser today, one of the more disturbing moments was when somebody, a reporter, pointed out to him that he stood right next to somebody in a photo who had tested positive for the virus. And he said, "Well, I haven't tried." It seemed like he didn't understand that not having traveled doesn't mean you're not going to get it. He doesn't understand that like having a lot of confidence doesn't mean you're not going to get it. He completely didn't understand the way that diseases work. And then his first response to it was, "I don't know the guy. I don't know who that photo was taken with."
"I haven't seen the photo," he kept saying.
Well, I guess if he sees the photo, then the germ is like activate and it becomes an illness. It's like, I want to put my head in my hands, but I can't because of coronavirus right now.
I don't get that. "I haven't seen it." He loves denying that he's seen pictures that he 100% has seen. And you know he's seen it. And it doesn't matter if you've seen the picture. It's not like, if somebody goes to stab you, don't let anyone take a picture because that's what makes it real. It has nothing to do with anything.
No, but in this case, it actually has a deadly effect. Why? So he usually denies that because he views a picture as evidence. And it's usually in a criminal action. There's a picture of you with Lev Parnas, who's now been arrested on some Ukrainian scam. He says, "Oh, I haven't seen the picture. There might be some pictures, but I haven't seen the picture." Meaning like, "Oh, you don't have the evidence on me. And if I don't see it, then it isn't evidence, right?" But in this case, it isn't a criminal situation. And it doesn't matter if there's evidence or not. You either have the virus or you don't. The picture is irrelevant. But the reason why there's deadly ramifications is that since he views the world that way, that is why he did not order up more testing as soon as the virus came out. Because he thought, if they don't see it, they won't think it's real, then the markets will be stable and I'll get reelected. But again, that's not how a disease works. They're gonna get sick whether they see the picture or whether you test them or not. And he is such a megalomaniac, so obsessed with himself that he can only think about how it affects him. And that is why he's not getting tested, so you don't feel like he's weak if he has it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't let others get tested or he delayed it terribly. That's the number one problem right now we have with the virus in America, that we can't test people because he thought, well, then if there's no evidence, they can't blame me.
Yeah.
Is there a Winston Churchill quote for that?
I'll have to look. Okay, well, why don't we take our first break? Oh, we have a lot to get to.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFDR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFDR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
After this.
All right, back on the Young Turks. So many of your comments. Just Kofefe, okay, writes in. Cenk, that slow motion sounded like a robot with a cat stuck in it. God, I hope not. Gabby Morita says, March 13th, 2020, a national emergency declares a national emergency. Today, irony died. Yeah. Zeke the Pickle Hater writes in, Trump found two big words with a very, very large brain. Okay. Colorado Blue Blazer Regular writes in, look at Aaron coming out of the gate hard, a meme-mergency. I love it.
I did like that. That's good.
There's a lot of that love. So that's all the member section. But on Twitter, Bubba Kank says, Aaron Ryan's a great host. Have her on more.
Oh.
Okay, duly noted. Thank you, guys. Back to the member section. Sanders waving hands says, MSNBC today was all about questioning why we don't have more social safety nets. Well, there is one program you all despise on MSNBC. It's called Medicare for All, and it's kind of a social safety net. Then a couple of YouTube super chats. Nikib the Progressive says, I love you, Cenk. Well, I love you back. Thank you. And thanks for using YouTube Super Chat. Now, this one is sad. Luck Dragon writes in, mother with four cancers, one stage four and terminal, and nephew who's susceptible to sickness, and a father who's working himself to death at 61 for barely $40,000 a year. Hashtag veterans for Bernie. Hashtag Medicare for all. We need to treat everyone who's sick in this country, not just people who have coronavirus, that's very important, but anyone who's sick, anyone whose life is in danger. If your life is in danger because of a crime, we have a public government office for that. It's called the police department. If your life is in danger because of a fire, we have a fire department that is public. It is government. It is socialism, whatever you want to call it. And if your life is in danger because you're sick, we also need a government office for that. Not all of medicine, just health insurance. The primaries are not over. If ever there was a case for voting for one person based on one issue, this is it. And there are, of course, very important elections on Tuesday. We will cover them on Tuesday. And there's a debate on Sunday. There's some of you asked about the moderators and whether they'll ask any legitimate debate questions or maybe even leak the questions to Joe Biden. At this point, I wouldn't even be surprised, honestly. And it happened last time around, so it's not like it's an outrageous claim. And I've asked the moderators to ask specific questions of Joe Biden. That would be mildly challenging on this issue. I would be shocked if they did. Instead, they'll probably turn back around and ask Bernie, treating people who are sick in the middle of the coronavirus, how are you going to pay for that? Yeah. That is what they have asked every time and will likely ask again.
Yeah, even as we're in a situation where the fact that we don't have that system has resulted in a panic that has erased trillions of dollars in value. We don't have to talk about how much that's cost us. It's amazing. I don't think they're going to leak the questions. I think they're going to ask incredibly boring questions designed to provide an easy path for Joe Biden and have nothing that shakes up the race.
They don't have to leak them. Every question to Biden is going to be.
Also, he wouldn't remember them. If they gave it to him, you'd think that would really help, honestly.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just mean that he's a bad debater. I don't mean anything else. Anyway, okay, why don't we talk about some more news? Okay. While the world is dealing with the spread of COVID-19, the American empire has not shut down and is in fact quite active in certain parts of the world, including in Iraq. The US military said it had launched defensive precision strikes early Friday morning against targets linked to the Iran-backed Qataib Hezbollah group, calling them a proportionate response to a rocket attack that killed one British and two American service members on Wednesday. That is their language. Just bear that in mind. Marine General Kenneth McKenzie Jr. said, "We assessed that each location stored weapons that would enable lethal operations against US and coalition forces in Iraq. We also assessed that the destruction of these sites will degrade Qataib Hezbollah's ability to conduct future strikes." It was unclear, though, if any militiamen were killed in the airstrikes, although McKenzie said he expected fatalities. And there were fatalities that have been reported, but they were not confirmed to be militiamen. And it appears that security personnel of the Iraqi government, as well as at least one civilian, were killed in that attack.
Yeah, I think this is a bit of a mixed issue. So you got two Americans and a British national who were killed in that rocket attack. So normally when that happens, we do counterstrike. So it's not, to me, is not as nearly as egregious as killing Soleimani, which was inviting a disastrous war. Notably, the attack that we think came from Iraq and Iran, and in Iraq is complicated because it's not the government of Iraq, it's a militia within Iraq, but that represents, that is recognized by the Iraqi government. So yes, it does get complicated. But that their attack against us was on Soleimani's birthday. So as a counterstrike to us killing their top general and one of the top officials in their government. So that did precipitate this whole round of attacks. But in the middle of a worldwide pandemic that both we and Iran are massively suffering from, instead of coming together, we're bombing each other to pieces. Yeah. I mean, if anything describes humanity in the year 2020, this is it.
Yeah, I'm really, I mean, and I hate to speak to my anxiety because sometimes I worry that we're giving them ideas. But I am really worried about the shock doctrine of it all. Like as the pandemic is happening, I'm worried that there'll be some sort of Patriot Act type thing that is foisted upon us. A war with Iran is something that I could see a president that will do just about anything to get headlines in his favor. I'm so worried about any news about military action right now because I'm so worried that it'll lead to opportunistic, power grabby, military industrial complex actions. Yeah. While we're not paying enough attention, we don't have the resources to handle what's happening back home.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean the pandemic has hit us so hard that like it's easy to forget that like the whole Soleimani thing where every day we were worried, are we going to launch attacks inside of Iran? That was like a month and a half ago. That was not so long ago. And we've so moved on already, but Trump could strike that whole thing back up anytime. And I share your fear. I think the more pressure that's put on Trump, the more worried he is about his reelection chances, the more likely he's going to go to one of the oldest plays in the book, and that is to launch an attack and hope that everyone rallies around you. Mm-hmm. Trump's base 100% would, and I worry that others who aren't necessarily big MAGA heads, especially in a time where they're terrified of what's happening, they might feel that same sort of knee-jerk response and find it appealing.
Especially as Trump and Fox News are trumpeting a foreign virus that has attacked us. Mm-hmm. So these are dark times. Normally in a movie, these type of times bring us together. When aliens attack all of us at once, we all get together. When there's a worldwide disaster, we all get together, but not in the movie called Life. So if you think coronavirus hit us hard, wait till you get a load of Iran. Iran is right now digging mass graves. I want to show you some of those because of how hard they've been hit by the coronavirus. It's one of the most affected countries in the world. And get a load of what has happened there. So these are graves the size of football fields. Because of how many cases there are in Iran. And people visit, they're trying to figure out how to dispose of the bodies. People visit cemeteries in the Iranian New Year that comes up on March 20th. They have to get ready for that. They can't go through the normal Muslim rituals and the burials because that involves cleaning the bodies and they're worried about cleaning the bodies and et cetera. Iran's foreign minister has coronavirus. So does one of the top advisors to Khamenei, Ali Akbar Velayati. 23 of their 290 members of parliament have coronavirus. Two have already died from it. Several vice presidents have tested positive. They have many vice presidents there. One of the top clerics in the country has also tested positive and has also died. So it's ripping through countries like Italy, Brazil, China, and definitely Iran. So while in the midst of them digging mass graves and us declaring a national emergency, we're bombing one another. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unreal sometimes what humanity does to itself.
Yeah, I mean, and having a national health-related crisis brings into relief how much we can't afford war. If we can't afford Medicare for all, then why can we afford war? Like right now, we need to take care of what's happening back here and not aggressively try to do tit for tats overseas. It's never the right time, but it's really, really not the right time.
Yeah. Why don't we turn to another story? There's quite a few that we want to get to with what remains of the hour. This is the sort of story that, considering what's going on in the world, you're probably unlikely to hear much about, but it's a tragedy, and I think we need to acknowledge it. A 19-year-old woman who was pregnant, traveling from Guatemala, wanted to get into the United States so that she could work and send money back to her family. But because there was a border wall, she had to attempt to climb it, and she fell from the border wall and died because of those injuries. Her name was Miriam Stephanie Garon Luna. She fell as she tried to climb the steel mesh barrier near El Paso. This is on Saturday. She was traveling with a 26-year-old man believed to be her partner and the baby's father, fell more than 6 meters. The man eventually found US Border Patrol agents, called for an ambulance to rescue her. She was taken to the hospital where doctors tried to deliver the baby. I believe she was 7 months pregnant. Some are saying 7, some are saying 8 months pregnant, but she was very close to birth. When she was injured, and she died of those injuries. Media reports say that she was a social worker and a beauty pageant winner and wanted to reach the US to help her family financially. And in that area, supposedly, before there was a wall, a lot of people crossing from Guatemala specifically would present themselves to Border Patrol. They would come in, they would present themselves, and then hopefully be able to spend some time in the US. But now they have to climb over the wall. And so, it's like 100% needless. So this person was just coming over to try to enrich, to work, to help the US, to help her own family too, which obviously much needed it, and died because we decided to put a wall there.
Well, I'm sure that the pro-life movement in this country is livid, not only for the poor 19-year-old woman who died, but for the 8-month fetus inside her body who passed away. And right now they're calling for tearing down that wall. Oh, right. No, they're not at all. Couldn't care less. Haven't said one word about it. When it's used for political purposes to take rights away from women, they're enraged and will vote on that issue and that issue alone. When you have, whether it was the jail in Milwaukee run by a Trump-supporting Republican sheriff who shackled a woman who was pregnant and would not get her medical help, and her baby died during delivery. Pro-life movement didn't care at all, loves that sheriff, because it's not really about life, it's not about the fetus, it's not about any of the things that they claim it's about. Has a single anti-choice leader in this country made a statement about this? Because I know they don't care about normal human beings, but ones that are actually alive. The idea that they would care about a 19-year-old Guatemalan is unthinkable. There's no way they care about that. But there was a fetus involved, guys. Nope, nothing. Nope. Beloved Donald Trump, thank God he built the wall. And I'd be shocked, honestly, if there wasn't a bunch of right wingers in this country that saw that news story and celebrated it.
Yeah, all I have to say is if the pro-life movement in the US doesn't want to be seen as a movement that is actually kind of trying to backdoor be proponents of a like white ethno state, they're doing a very bad job. They clearly don't care about brown women, about brown babies. They don't care about the extremely high maternal mortality rate among black mothers. They don't care about anything unless it is a white woman and a white baby, or it's a way to enforce the consequences of sex on women as punitive. Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example of something that everybody on the right side of the issue will say, oh yeah, of course this is what happened. But people on the wrong side of the issue aren't going to care about. This is like a cocktail of all the frustrating things about what's wrong with this country right now that aren't coronavirus related.
Yeah.
I guarantee you there are right wingers, hundreds of them, if not thousands of them right now, that when they see this story go, she had it coming. That's why we built the wall. You shouldn't try to climb it. You think there aren't those guys right now saying, no, she shouldn't have tried to climb it. Just ask family members, ask your neighbors. I guarantee you that's the first thing they say, because that's what the right wing has become now. And they still can't see that they're the bad guys in the movie. Like people who say a 19-year-old girl who lost her life and the life inside of her, because at 8 months it's viable, falling to her death is not a tragedy, but it's something to celebrate. Like, ha ha, the wall worked. And you don't get that you're the bad guy. That's amazing to me.
Yeah. Okay, we're gonna take another break, a little bit more out of this.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at tyt.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment. All right, back on the Young Turks. Let's go to YouTube Super Chat first. Start out light. Luke says, oh crap, they actually read these.
And we do.
Yeah, well, there it was. Dax Collins says, thank you for being the lighthouse we're going to need. Thank you, Dax. Yeah. We appreciate it. That was something we were talking about in the post game yesterday. Last half hour of the show is just for members, tyt.com/join to become a member. We could hit the join button underneath the YouTube video at the $4.99 level. You get all the post games, $9.99, you get all the videos. Okay, but we're also doing a fundraising drive because we really, really need it to keep the lights on in that lighthouse. So let's check in on it here at tyt.com/go. Yesterday we asked to get over 160,000. There we are, 160,085. I don't know how in the world we would do it over the weekend, but if we can get to 170 over the weekend, that would be amazing. Thank you guys for participating and for being our lighthouse. Brooke Dabba writes in, Bernie needs to come out guns blazing on the next debate. He needs to ask questions about Biden's record that the moderators will not. I read you that one because there's about a dozen more that said the same exact thing. So
it's just set up to protect Biden so much in every way. The time constraints, the fact that they'll move on to another thing, the way they frame everything. It is so hard to actually do what we want them to do.
I know. Last one, and again, this is in the category of sad, but this is why we read them. This is important for you guys to know each other's experiences. In the member section, Cornelius, this starts out funny because of the handle, Cornelius Pop was a bad dude. Okay.
It's a great handle.
It is a great handle. But they say, I live in Hawaii and until recently worked in an Asian dominated tourism. I have all the coronavirus symptoms, so I called the doctor. She informed me they're only testing select individuals over 65. And they call back if my shortness of breath gets so bad that I can't complete sentences out. This is nuts. They wrote. And we couldn't agree more. I mean, what kind of a brutal country do we have? And how incompetent is our leader that he didn't order the tests? And now you can't get a test unless you almost can't breathe anymore. It's almost as if the whole country is saying, I can't breathe. So that's where we are, which leads in, unfortunately, perfectly to the next story.
Keep America great. That's what I say.
Yeah.
Keep America as great as it needs to be for you to potentially die from something we should have been ready 4 months ago. Okay. We've had reasons to believe that Donald Trump, for some time, his slow response in terms of making sure that people who believe they might have been exposed to coronavirus could get tested for it, is it's his fear that the number of infections going up will make him look bad, and that could potentially hurt him. We are in a re-election bid for him, after all. Well, that hypothesis has turned out to apparently been true. In an interview with NPR, Dan Diamond, a reporter for Politico, gave an account of Alex Azar and Donald Trump and their conversations recently about this. So he said, in the case of Alex Azar, he did go to the president in January. He did push past resistance from the president's political aides to warn the president the new coronavirus could be a major problem. There were aides around Trump. Kellyanne Conway had some skepticism at times that this was something that needed to be a presidential priority. That should have some follow-up questions for her the next time she's on CNN. But he goes on to say, but at the same time, Secretary Azar has not always given the president the worst case scenario of what could happen. My understanding is Trump did not push to do aggressive additional testing in recent weeks, and that's partly because more testing might have led to more cases being discovered of coronavirus outbreak. And the president has made clear, the lower the numbers on coronavirus, the better for the president. The better for his potential re-election this fall.
Wow. Just when you thought he couldn't get any more callous. So this is what we were referring to earlier in the show. Trump thinking, well, if they don't know they have the disease, then they won't blame me. And the markets won't go down and I'll get re-elected. So if that story is true and he did not order the tests, which is the number one problem we have right now in dealing with the virus. We cannot get the tests. There's almost none available here. And he ordered, it's because he didn't want you to find out if you have the disease so he could look better. There's literally almost nothing that a president could do that's worse than that. Breaking into the political offices of the other party, what Nixon got driven out of office for, seems mild by comparison. So look, I know we went through an impeachment. I know everybody knows he's a monster and has accepted that he's a monster. I know the Republican Party will back him no matter what happens, no matter if they know this is true or not. In fact, the Democrats have a relief bill for the coronavirus right now, and the Republicans have held it up because they don't want to anger Donald Trump. That they agree with it. They would pass it today, but they're afraid that Donald Trump will say something mean about them if they work with the Democrats on a relief bill. So this is what the country has come to with this kind of monster in charge that doesn't care about your health, your well-being, or even your life. The only thing he cares about is me, and his stupid re-election.
Yeah, I think, you know, in addition to Donald Trump not inspiring confidence as a leader or somebody who has a soul, take a look at the other people who are in charge of this response. Mike Pence, who oversaw an AIDS outbreak when he was governor of Indiana. We have Alex Azar, a bona fide zealot, an actual zealot in charge of HHS. And below him, we have Seema Verma, who is constantly trying to grab power. She's basically like a suck up with no soul, a kind of Kellyanne Conway, but of HHS. And in fact, on Monday, during that same interview that Dan Diamond did with Terry Gross, he talks about how on Monday, HHS's email went down. And the reason it went down is because Seema Verma was running an email test for her department, and she didn't tell anybody about it. And then after they took away responsibilities for her own email, like her division's email, she ran to the White House to complain in the middle of a pandemic that she wanted email responsibilities back. Those are who are mm-hmm. in charge of this response. It is a president who's only thinking of re-election so much so that he's trying to repress test results. Mike Pence, Alex Azar, and Seema Verma.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's amazing. So we read this, we think it's important that you know it. I don't understand, and look, nobody wants to go through any more investigations. It's probably a waste of time and it's grueling mentally and emotionally, but how does this not lead to investigations? An assertion that he doesn't want the testing because it might look bad is insane, should be criminal. And by the way, kind of easy to believe because just like less than 2 weeks ago, he was talking about the people on the cruise ship that are being held. And he said, you know, I was told they want to take some of those people off, but I don't want the numbers to develop for something that's not our fault, you know? So I don't want them to come off. Like he said there, I don't want the numbers to be higher. I would rather leave people in a situation where they won't be getting as good care. They can potentially expose thousands of other people to the disease. I don't want the numbers to go up. And so if there are any communications to this effect, we need to know that. This should not result in him being removed from the presidency. It should be the result should be him being thrown in prison if people have died as a result of his choice. And by the way, you've probably seen multiple doctors have said that they have started to conduct testing and been told by the CDC to stop testing people for coronavirus, implying that they actually had the kits but were being told not to use it. Now, it seems insane that some doctor at the CDC, some official at the CDC, would just unilaterally say, you know what, they're worried about a cluster. And by the way, lots of people died in the Seattle cluster that a doctor was trying to investigate and was told not to. That they would choose to stop that. It seems as if somebody must have given them a directive to not do that. And I don't know, I'm just an idiot on the internet, but someone should be looking into this.
So remember, he also hasn't had himself tested from what we understand, if we believe him. And we know he's been exposed to at least two people who have tested positive. But it's all about theatrics, it's all about showmanship and marketing. And if you don't know the truth, well, then you can't blame Donald Trump. And today in the press conference, he said, I don't have any responsibility at all for this. And the reality is, no, you have tremendous responsibility. And on the live show, I just read a comment from one of our members where they explained that they seem to have all of the symptoms of the coronavirus. And they talked to a doctor, and the doctor told them, here, I'll quote this person again, call back if my shortness of breath gets so bad that I can't get complete sentences out. Because there's no test kits, because Trump wouldn't order them, so he didn't look bad. This is the monster that's in charge. You know, though, for the folks who know this story and still support Donald Trump, I actually feel worse for you than Donald Trump. Because you look at all that and you go, so what? He's my guy. I don't care. I don't care if people get sick. I don't care if they get tested. I don't care if there's no test kits. The most important thing is we have to protect the vanity of Donald Trump. That's probably the sickest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, make America great belongs on a few headstones, it sounds like.
Remember, the virus doesn't give a damn if you're a Republican, doesn't care if you are a MAGA guy. It's not about Republicans, Democrats, or independents. Everyone gets the virus if they're exposed to it. So you can cover for Trump all you want, but if you get it, and you, especially because we didn't have enough test kits and we didn't know who to contain, so it spread and spread and spread, there's a very clear answer to who was responsible for that. All right. So sorry to end on a sour note for this hour, but that is the news we have today. When we come back, there are some amazing stories. We have a second hour for you guys. If you haven't heard what happened to Andrew Gillum, that's a fascinating story. Don't miss that. But hey, we got good news. Katie Porter doing a wonderful job of fighting back. There's a progressive congressperson. And everybody, don't forget to check out Damage Report. That's John's show on the network. And of course, Hysteria on Crooked Media. That's Aaron's podcast. So Aaron Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Anytime. All right, whole nother power panel when we return. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.